upstairs just now.
Well,
And that was the same with the PNPR in the past got approved to say that it meets the legal requirements. Now, in addition to that, it requires an environmental authorization before the activity can take place. And that's the key difference.
Okay, and then there were quite a lot of questions around of clarity, essentially around the Minister of Mineral Energy and the power of the Minister of Mineral Energy to implement any military were clarified along the way. So essentially what we then ended up with, and if we go then to page 13, what we ended up with is a set of amendments that essentially tighten, clarify, correct and align issues that in the world that came from the portfolio committee. Okay, section on page 13, then 2.3.3 deals with the definition of minister in section 1, and the select committee amends the definition of minister. The minister means in relation to all environmental ministers except with regard to the implementation of environmental legislation, regulations, policies, strategies, and guidelines relating to prospecting mineral exploration, production, and related activities, and prospecting mining, exploration, production area means the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. And essentially all that it did was to clarify much more clearly what the Minister of Mineral Energy does and what the Minister of Environmental Affairs does, so you couldn't have any confusion over the area of jurisdiction and mandate between the two. So this is a tightening of language, and we think that it is going to make it, it's going to, I think we would have ended up, the first one was potentially conflict. We would have had potential conflict. So it's just tightening the definition. Then, and if you want to, it's in Bill C, it's clause 1.1 on page 2, and if you want to find it in Bill D, it's page 4, line 9. Okay. Then, 3.5, section 24.4. And it involves here page 2, source 2, part 1. And on both here page 7, between the lines 5 and 6, is where you'll find it. But if you can just read it from here. And here it's a new insertion, and it was due to concerns about the potential impact on the rigor of the EIA process due to the inclusion of a qualified discretion in terms of the minimum requirements introduced by Section 24.4b of the Bill. And what we then did, essentially what happened is that people, the stakeholders and the select committee wanted to keep a situation where the rigor of the EIA process was maintained, including rigor around public participation and urban minimum requirements for EIA. At the same time, the Bill enabled the creation of new instruments. Now, the minimum requirements for those new instruments might be different to the EIA, and you don't want to temper the introduction of a new instrument by preempting what it does by saying the same requirements apply to the EIA. So what we've done is to clarify that the EIA system remains as it is. And then as we introduce new instruments, you're going to have a set of bottom lines, but then the specifics of those instruments will be appropriate to whatever they are. So this amendment does that. It makes that distinction. Okay. Yeah.
We don't have to get into it now, but keep it open for life. We as a control group have this rule. We think that that's our second house. There's a house and a credit for the SOP. The SOP triggered this. Now, from the SOP that we go to the speaker, we then decide to ask
for the move straight from the HOP in the house for after the control committee. But after passing the bill, we didn't go to, we just go across the street to another control committee, to the house.
No, I understand the process. And it is the big speaker that refers it to the committee.
Section 2042A, after section 2042 and before section 2043. It's on page 2 in Bill C, and in Bill D is page 10, lines 1 to 5.
I think also when you get an amendment to the schedule, one of the insertions that to the schedule after the 3-year period needs to be deleted again. So there will be a reference to the deletion of this insertion when you get to the schedule.
And so what the insertion reads is it becomes a 2462A, the Minister of Minerals and Energy must be identified as a competent authority in terms of subsection 1, where the activity constitutes protecting mining exploration, production or related activities occurring within the protecting mining exploration or production area. So similarly to that other one, it's kind of defined in space and in relation to activity where the Minister of Minerals and Energy has authority. Okay. Then clause 5, which is amendment to section 24, is of the principal acting no further reading. Then under clause 6, which are the which are the amendments to 24G of the Act, and basically as the Minister of Mineral Energy was during the initial phase be responsible for environmental authorities, he or she should also be able to rectify unlawful activities during this period. So it's a consistency. It takes the 24G gives Mineral Energy the same powers in relation to the areas under their control for that initial period to rectify. And it is done through the assertion in 24G1 by the words the Minister of Mineral and Energy, or then you've got all the MEC consensus the case may direct the applicant to. So basically what it does is to sort that out. So it's on page 10 in 1938 to the Minister of Mineral and Energy. Then the next one is also largely, well it's not largely editorial, it's a deletion. And it's a deletion that of a phrase that will eliminate any opportunity for a less rigorous process for unlawful activities than what is the case for lawful ones. Okay, so I mean essentially we rectified what was a language unclarity that could have resulted in an unacceptable situation. And where it is in Bill C is page 10, line 50. And at the moment, 24G1 reads, on application by a person who has committed an offence, in terms of section 24.28A, the Minister of Mineral and Energy or any of the concerned, as the case may be, may direct the applicant to compile a report, and what the words contain, and then what is being deleted in one or more of the following names. Because that would have then meant that if you legally go through the process, you have to do it all, but if you illegally don't do the process, there was a choice of one or more. So we've just made it the same as lawful and unlawful are now exactly the same when you rectify. So you don't get an easier process if you have committed, if you've undertaken an activity unlawfully. Then in the next one is an editorial error, which is inserting A or B right at the end because that was 24G2A, yeah. So it says a person contemplated in subsection 1 which claims minister is found which may not exceed 1 million rand and which must be determined by the competent authority for the minister or MEC concerned and acting terms. And it says subsection 2, but it is subsection 2 A or B. So it's been clarified. Then 24K3. There is an assertion right at the end of the clause in order to prevent a situation where an inferior process again will be regarded as sufficient to constitute an environmental authorization. So it's the same as previously when you're ensuring that the minimum requirements are met in all cases. And right at the end, after
section 24.4b are given a check to entire process. So it's the same as previously where you check the comparability of process impact if you use others that must comply with the minimum requirements. Then the next one is 24L4, and it's the same issue, and the amendment prevents the situation again, where, and it's done, we've taken out there's both a deletion and an insertion, but it also puts in fact the root of the EIA process. And the new would read, a competent authority entitled to Chapter 5 to issue an environmental authorization may regard an authorization in terms of any other legislation to issue these releases that, and the word substantially meets all the requirements stipulated in Section 24.4a and where it's applicable Section 24.4b to be an environmental authorization in terms of that chapter. So the language has been tightened up and the comparability between processes has been emphasized.
I'm not going to type now because it's just issue any other authorization. That's the other thing.
Okay. And a competent authority entitled to check the
card. A competent authority in this case,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to give the issue. That's the other thing.
Okay.
No, that's the other thing.
A competent authority entitled to check the card to issue an environmental authorization may regard an authorization in terms of any other legislation.
Any other legislation?
Yeah, that substantially meets all the requirements of the PLA within Section 24.4a and where applicable Section 24.4b.
I agree with you, sir. Now, with any other legislation, sir, I don't know. If you're saying that now, we are meeting issues of authorization. Any other legislation, with any other legislation, because we have LIMA and then the MPRPA.
Okay.
But how can you say we can issue the authority using any other legislation?
Okay. It wouldn't happen with minerals because they will now use NEPA. If you look at the National Water Act and the licensing of water under the National Water Act, or the issuing of a license for a landfill site under the National Water Act, at the moment, what people go through these two processes. They go through a National Water Act licensing process, they go through an EIA process. All of this says is that where the process of issuing the water license meets all the minimum requirements of an EIA, so they do the information, they do the research, they consult the public, they issue a report, they do an analysis, then if all of that has been done and complies with, if their process then is substantially equal to what is in NEMA, then we can use that process. So that's what the effect would be.
No,
so it's got to meet it. So sorry, I was reading wrong. Substantially, basically, another process has got to meet all of the requirements of the EIA process in order for us to be able to use it. So I think that it's actually much tighter. It's not just the meet it. It's not equivalent. It's not that it can be taken to the same. It's got to meet the requirements of EIA, which are essentially that you make an application for an activity, you identify the activity, you do an investigation, you identify the impacts, you look at whether they can be mitigated, you consult stakeholders on it, you then issue a report for them to come in. So all of those things would have to be done in order for one to be able to use a streamlined process.
Substantially,
it's a matter of degree. No, substantially deleted. It just says flatly, it says meet all the requirements that you have in Section 24.4a and where applicable 24.4b. Okay. Then, 24 on the floor, 24, and it is an insertion, and it is on page 3 of Bill B, it's clause 8.3, and then in Bill B, it's page 13, line 24.
and the insertion ensures that the current environmental protection provided in the NPRDA for mining-related activities remain in place. Because there are things in the NPRDA that were positive. I thought this was in my where environmental impact assessment has been identified as an environmental instrument to be utilized in informing an application for environmental authorization, or where such application relates to protecting mining exploration production and related activities on a prospecting mining exploration production area, the Minister of Mineral Energy and any to identify competent authority must require the submission of an environmental management program before considering an application for environmental authorization. And it's very important in mining, because in a mining application, what you do is you have to upfront be able to say how you're going to manage the mine, so that when it closes, you need to be able to set upfront what is going to happen when that mine closes. So one doesn't want to issue an authorization for mining before you've actually looked at their management plan, which also looks at the closure issue. So what it does is to keep the EMPR system in place in mining, but it isn't the basis for approval. It is then part of what you have to consider for an environmental authorization. So what this does is to keep that in place, but then as part of the information base, to be being able to issue an authorization. Yeah, and then obviously for EIA, as you can see, kind of, because basically there's an ongoing management and compliance monitoring system that would need to be put in place, and you've got a plan up front that allows you. Because what it means is that you can then look at how they're going to manage the environmental impact of that mine over the life of the mine, and in your authorization for the EIA, you can write in a set of requirements that are going to keep them on, keep them in line on what they've actually committed to in that document. It's quite important that it's deep and recognized. Any thoughts to add?
I think that it's important that it's not been added only for mining. It's been added for everything where the environmental impact assessment leads to an environmental authorization. What we are now saying currently, the competent authority can say the required environmental management program either before or after the environmental authorization or not. What this insertion does is to say that if EIA is the instrument that is to be used, there must be an environmental management program. And that environmental management program must be considered before an environmental authorization can be issued. So it's not only for mining, it's for everything signed in the EIA regulation. In my information programs on our control.
Yeah. Yes. I was just asking, I'm bothered by the element of the aspect of liability. You see, I keep on going there. Approval and authorization. Now, if I submit a application for my exploration, in terms of the relevant section, and I get an approval. That approval is now doing it. Right. And then you can all ask the figure I must get a foundation. Now, internal liability is a state liable in the team. I say, and then also sue. Do the issue, then sue the deed of having internal liability. What you see, my wife is. There should not be a straight point of elevation, or nothing at all, an opinion of elevation. But in terms of two things, one, approval. Now, approval, the lawyers will have a few days of court. And then, when anything is approved, then it could be understood to be good, to be okay. Now, my plan committed all the resources on the understanding that. Then somewhere they will come off and not get authorization. Now, there are damages. So who carries the land? Who carries the cash?
Okay.
I'm worried about two things.
Okay.
Of approval and authorization.
Okay. There used to be an approval system for mining. And in EIA,
had an authorization and then afterwards you did a plan. Now what he's saying is when you do your EIA, one of the documents that you must hand in as part of your EIA package of documents is an environmental management, proposed environmental management plan for your activity. That environmental management plan is considered when issuing the authorization and also informs the conditions of the authorization. So it's not a two-stage process. We make the environmental management plan an upfront requirement. Also because it enables us to produce better and more rigorous authorizations. Because, for example, if someone says, our environmental management plan says that we are going to need to remove sand from this area twice a day for the next 5 years, in the authorization, we can then say when you remove sand from the area for the next 5 years, you can only do it during working hours, you've got to spray it with water so the city can dust it. It enables us to then write an authorization that is a much tighter one. So it isn't a two-phase process. It's saying every activity that requires an EIA has got to have an environmental management plan. That environmental management plan is considered together with the EIA, and then we ensure that in writing the EIA authorization, that the issues in those environmental management plans are considered and taken into account, and we basically make them mandatory.
So
it depends on the nature of the activity. In certain cases, what you in fact require is a separate EIA for closure in order to get it back to what it was. So I think that if you look at it, I mean, if you build a shopping centre, essentially the environmental impacts are issues around, firstly, there are big construction impacts, and then there are impacts around things like waste and traffic and air quality potentially that needs to be managed, and your authorization would address all of those. But the management plan for something like that would largely be around construction, and then they set up a waste management. They'd have to demonstrate to us that they put in place a proper waste management system, or that they had put in a proper stormwater management system or something like that. Then you have activities like, for example, landfill sites. When you close a landfill site, you have to go through a whole new EIA process, because the closure of a landfill site is something, there's a huge, huge set of environmental impacts associated with closure, including stabilizing the land and that in fact require a new process. So when you close a landfill site, you've got to go through a whole new process. With mines at the moment, what you do is that environmental management plan covers the life of the mine. The mine would say, we're going to mine this area for 25 years, and the environmental management plan would identify what the issues are over that 25-year period and what would need to be dealt with on a detailed, in a detailed way. And then there's a separate mine closure process. So it varies from place, from activity, depending on the nature of the activity. But what this is going to do is going to make people undertaking development activities think a lot more clearly upfront over what the impacts are during the life of the activity and what they're going to need to manage. And then there are certain cases where you close down things that you then require a completely new process, because there's such a new set of active closure activity and stop generating new set of environmental hazards, and then those things are listed as requiring activities where they get EI authorization for the decommissioning and for closure. And there's a mine closure process, there's a landfill closure process, there's decommissioning activities that all get dealt with separately.
Good.
Okay.
Whole mine just collapsed. Two, 10 wide, 2,000 bricks. Very big, the mud grave. 300 meters down. Now, our retrospective is just pretty good. So he was just walked away from it. What you see there
you have to visit the houses where the hospital is going to touch the house. And what actually angered me a little crime, although I didn't have a laptop in my pocket, was another product. The same company still has the nerve to go and explore elsewhere. But then it was looking at I was in the journalism community. I just said, how did this happen? How did this happen? And there's this fascinating explanation that his group, when they explore, they leave natural pillars, which are huge cold, and which are opposed themselves to carry the supernatural. But then because of the green, then they went and changed, and said there's still more cold. They went and changed and made these things even narrower. So they made them narrow to fit more COVID.
Yeah.
And then what happened, they say, just like it was again. That's what they said. But the point is this. How to suspect this? How to suspect this? How far does it go?
Okay.
In terms of closure, the commission, etc. Or does it just at the moment, you know, it's the fact.
Okay.
How far they can go?
Okay. I think so. I mean, essentially, where these transit go would be around, we wouldn't deal necessarily with all operations, which is another thing. Because, for example, the cult of disaster, I think, was in part mineral and energy has got mine health and safety requirements. And my understanding of cult was that they actually did not comply with the mine health and safety requirements, which is that. So I think there's a different legal regime that deals with the safety issues. And the disasters in mines are invariably because the mine owners are not actually complying with DME's legislation regarding mine health and safety. And that is what happened with COBRA. But what these would do is that someone would say, I'm running a mine, it's likely to be X amount of time. And then the plan would need to cover the operations during that time. And then there's a separate closure process that would need to the undertaking that comes back into that is now in NEMA as well, so we would need to run the closure process from an environmental perspective. So if you look at 24R, which is not, I mean, we didn't, which is included, there's a section on mine closure on environmental authorization, and it says, and we're not dealing with it here, it wasn't further amended by the NCRP, but it says, every holder of an authorized owner of woods remains responsible for any environmental liability, pollution or ecological degradation, the pumping and treatment of extraneous water, the management and sustainable closure thereof until the Minister of Mineral and Energy has issued a closure certificate in terms of the Minimum Petroleum Resources Development Act to the holder or owner control. So, I mean, there's an ongoing liability that you do have. The problem is that in reality, a lot of the owners of these mines disappear. And you get these ownerless and derelict mines that then revert back to government as something the government is with the problem of dealing with. You know, but I think there's a whole mining thing that is trying to prevent that from the provision of security up front and the range of things in the mineral legislation.
I think it's more political. I think we must not lose an opportunity over the and you are the fact that there are these white threads that actually came out of the mine, which are in addition to the collapsing, but the army was called to force the people to go back into the mine. So those 2,000 less people and 10 white died from the study.
Yeah.
And there's no reparation, there's no restoration. So we are passing a lot here for the policy, but then we lose the opportunity. I think it's a lot to burden us. But I think we must use this opportunity where the liability, we actually absorb those people who say, well, where is the part that's going to be? Just escaped, you know. Fortunately, if we will fight back to catch up with us.
Yeah.
Those are big organizations, they must still be around you.
Yeah. The environmental liability is a continuing one. The environmental liability doesn't go away. The other thing is that in the waste world, the section on uncontaminated land and the requirements and remediation, which are retrospective, would also apply where that is what the problem is. So if you look at things like acid mine drainage, or if you look at a situation where cyanide has been used in a mining operation and the soil is contaminated, in terms of the waste and that contaminated land section, would also be applicable to those
circumstances and also retrospectively.
In this way, you can look at different move past what about 65 minutes to finish the public coming in.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to be trying to follow up on what you just said. In view of the changes that happened back then, what have we got in place to make sure that such mishaps don't ever happen in future after a mining company says we are decommissioning the mining activities on this particular spot?
Okay, there is the Mine Health and Safety Act. That covers both situations. And my understanding is that that act has been updated and is quite a progressive piece of legislation. But those issues have been dealt with, by, like how you run the mine itself and what you do or don't blast and how narrow or thick you go and how far underground, all of that is the Mine Health and Safety Act that actually regulates that. It's not the environmental legislation. We would deal with the environmental consequences of the mine and the way during the life of the mine, the impact that it has on the environment. Okay. All right, then we're coming on to the schedule in terms it's a very small editorial correction in page 16. D was left out, so it says every holder and every holder of an old order right has and, so we just added a D. It's a very small editorial correction in that one. Page 16, line 3. Okay. Then we go on to the schedule in terms of 4:13 until we almost finish. These amendments to the schedule relate to this transitional period. And you will remember we've got two transitional periods. The one is 18 months before this comes into effect and before mining authorization goes into NEMA. And then we've got a 3-year period at which the entire function comes back to be. And so this last set of amendments are just to get that correct in the schedule and to take back the power at the end of the 3-year process. And the first one is on page 19 of the line 11 to insert the following item, and it says amendment of section 24C of Act 107 of 1998. The section 24C of the principal act is hereby amended by the deletion of subsection 2A. Okay, and what it does is to then allow that power to come back into environmental affairs after that 3-year period. And there are then a couple of other changes. The one, and I'm reading now from C, is on page 19 in line 34 to omit and to substitute. There's an E in inverted commas, and the proposed amendment would read, it's all three of them, yeah. It's the last one. I'm going to read the holistic, which is the transitional arrangement. The principal act is hereby amended by the deletion of the expression or the Minister of Mineral and Energy, which the case may be, wherever it appears in section 24(1), section 24(F)(1A), and section 24(G)(1). Then E, by the deletion of the expression Minister of Minerals and Energy, wherever it appears in section 24(M)(4). If by the deletion of the expression the Minister of Mineral Energies wherever it appears in section 24(N)(11A), 5, 6, and section 24(01)(2), and by the substitution for the expression Minister of Mineral Energy wherever it appears in section 24(N)(4), and 7, section 24(04) and 5, section 24(P)(1), 2, 3, 4, and 5, and section 24(R)(1) and 2) of the word Minister. So essentially, this is the transitional, this clause comes into effect after the 3-year period and essentially takes Minister of Mineral and Energy out of the equation and brings mining PIA fully into the system under the competency of the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs. Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Okay, so that's
that last set of amendments to get the references to it and then get the references to it.
But where the publisher is included in the
subsection? All this does is to get the consequential amendment to it. It just identifies where you've got to take the word Minister of Mineral Energies after the case of Prime Minister.
That is the opinion of the committee. The legislation is desirable to amend the National Environment Management Act of 1998 so that it is setting the existing effects of the other. The first amendment in the environmental organization to empower the Ministry of Energy to implement the environmental management task of the National Environmental Management Act of 1998 in so far as it was processing, mining, exploration, production, or activities. On the process of mining, exploration, or production area. Palai is going to have a final with the National Development Management Act of 2008 by providing for the use of one environmental system and by providing for environmental management program. Consultation with the Department of Prevention from Certain Provisions of the National Development Management Act of 2008, financial provisions for the regulation of environmental damage, management of hazardous water, forest, and energy deposits, the covering of costs in the event of environmental minerals, and the issue of closed certificates, the visibility to consider the environmental strategy, and the setting actual observations to provide for matter connected with them. The removal from the social development of the Logan and the Mount Kalah. I will agree to the amendment before six. I will agree on all the floor further. I will agree on the amendment to go in. I will agree on the our great only, another one is seven. I'll ask you on all the amendments of the group, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Move up on, adopt it. The report of the Postal Commission of Oriental Affairs and Public Commission on the matter of the Oriental Commission.
thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.